Of the Gerwick Report. I am Steve Gerwick, along with my longtime tag team partner, Frank D. And another edition of the podcast that tells it like it is. It is Monday, September the 15th, 2014. And let's say what's up to my tag team partner, Frank D.
Steve, the what's up today basically is that I read on Twitter last week after we did the Vince Russo interview, people were saying, hey, can we stop talking about Russo? It's 2014, he's bad for business. You know what? Frank D says, Russo is great for our business. And that's all I got to say about that.
Yeah, we got quite the response to that interview. We were getting, love the interview, love that you guys asked the hard questions. And then the flip side is, who cares what Vince Russo says? And, you know, Frank, I always knew that Vince Russo was a very polarizing figure. I guess until you talk to him and you do an interview with him and get the response, I had no idea it was that polarizing. I mean, there's people that will – everything that Vince Russo says is gospel, and then other people will say no matter what he says, he's lying.
Well, here's the thing with that. It doesn't matter whether Russo is lying or Russo is telling the truth. Vince Russo is such a polarizing character, he's always going to get some type of a reaction. And that's exactly what happened. So I was happy with the interview. I'm talking to you. I know you were happy with it. And I can't wait to do round two.
And, you know, the thought was, do you think that Vince Russo is the most polarizing character in wrestling today?
I think Russo is it's pretty much, yes, an enigma is what he is now. You know, he's a guy, and we touched on this in the interview, is that the guy, you know, makes you believe that he is what he isn't. You know, and that's the thing. I think so many people get wrapped up into what Russo did on television, and they think that that's actually the guy. And it just goes back into wrestling business, man, you know, where you have marks and smarts.
We are here to ask the hard questions, and it's just all about if somebody's willing to come on our podcast. You know, we always say that we're the podcast that tells it like it is. I don't know if people expected us to, you know, kiss Russo's ass for 2 hours. We're not going to do that. And I think Vince Russo does deserve some credit for coming on here because we have been critical of him. And he came on here, and one thing we did up front before we started the interview, we said, is there anything off limits? Is there anything you don't want us to talk about? Anything you don't want to discuss? And he said, no, he's fine with whatever he wanted to ask. He was very generous with his time, and you know, I think he deserves a lot of credit.
Absolutely, you know, and we kind of butted heads in the beginning, you know, when I brought up you know some stuff concerning ECW or whatever, and if Russo wasn't, you know, a guy that was a man of his word, he easily could have just said, okay, I'm going to be done with the interview, and it would have been over. But he kept going with it, and I thought it turned out great. And like I said, the real conversation that people don't know about happened when we were off the air. That was, you know, just, you know, it was just basically, you know, it's something that's in the works. The part two, I think the part two interview will probably be just as good as part one when we actually do it.
I'm listening back to it, and I'm thinking I should have asked him this, I should have asked him that.
Yep.
So I'm making a list, and I'm sure you probably did the same thing. We got a lot of questions for round two, and if there's something out there that we need to discuss with Russo that you can think of as well, we'd be glad to hear it. You know, you can tweet us at Gerwick or RealFrankDEE on Twitter, which I know you were getting a lot of response on Twitter. It was funny, too, Frank, is the response we were getting on Twitter was positive and negative, as you would expect, but some people were not listening to the same interview we were listening to. I know people were saying I got schooled by Russo, or I healed on Russo, or he called me out, or I didn't believe a word he was saying. I'm not sure what interview they were listening to, but interesting perspectives on that particular podcast.
Exactly. It was interesting that everybody, you know, had a comment, positive or negative. To me, you know what? Any publicity to me is good publicity. So I don't really give a damn, you know, if people agree with us or if they didn't agree with us. The fact that you're talking about it is the bottom line at the end of the day. A lot of the stuff was basically, you know, that Russo didn't do this or Russo didn't do that or whatever. I don't know. I would say ask Mr. Russo yourself. You know what I'm saying? But I enjoyed the interview. I thought it was damn good. It was the first one that I've done. And it was cool to take on somebody who has been in WWE and WCW, WWE, TNA. It's been, you know, a worthwhile experience, and I really enjoyed it. The guy deserves credit where credit's due. He also deserves, when you know, the guy does something negative, you point out and call him on his negativity. You also point out his positives, and I see a lot of positives right now with the interview and the fact that Russo took on the hardball questions. We didn't ask Russo any fluff. You know, it's a lot of people that come on here and do interviews with certain people, and they'll ask them fluff questions to be on their good side. We don't do that here. We do exactly what we were going to do before we started, and we saw it to the end.
And you know, Frank, we're not going to have interview subjects. A lot of subjects are not going to come on here because of the interview we did.
Exactly. We've called out because Dixie Carter. We've not gotten a response from Dixie Carter. We've called her out. We've called out Jimmy Fart several times about to come on here and talk to the fans, let the people know about what's going on with the network and the music on the network. It never happened. People don't want to have the hardball questions because people today in society don't want confrontation. They don't want that. The conversation's not good. So they don't want it. Just like we can say all day long, we can go and talk to TNA and try to get people to come on here and plug their Bound for Glories or their One Night Onlys, and their TNA management is so stupid, they don't want their talent to come on here. I mean, who right now, TNA needs us more than we need TNA, bottom line.
Well, here's the thing, too, is we could have a lot of subjects on this podcast, and we could interview a lot of different people. I could just say, let's just interview someone every single week. Problem is, the subjects are not engaging, they're not genuine. There's a lot of people out there looking to get themselves over, a lot of people out there trying to get over their products, their t-shirts, their DVDs, where they're going to appear, etc. We want an interview that people want to talk about, that people want to listen to. It's not just, oh, where were you born, and where did you grow up, and who was your favorite wrestler growing up, etc. I mean, we ask legitimate questions, and if you can't handle the legitimate questions, then certainly our podcast is not for you. Because as Frank D and I always said, since day one, we're the podcast that tells it like it is.
Yeah, and we're not very politically correct in this podcast either.
Exactly. So I think Vince Russo, as we said, we asked him up front, is there anything you don't want to talk about? Okay, that's cool. Let's roll. And I think, honestly, when the interview started and he got real defensive almost right off the bat, talking about ECW, and he said that he was not – that he does the interviews with the internet wrestling community and he feels like he has to defend himself on everything and that we don't accept his answers. His answers weren't good enough. And I think you handled it perfectly, Frank. He even insinuated that you called him a liar and you said, I didn't call you a liar. I think you put it all on the table early in that interview and Vince Russo responded as he did. And I think as the interview progressed that he realized that Frank D knows what he's talking about. Frank D's been a wrestling fan for a long time, listened to a lot of interviews, studied the business, and he's not just some jabroni Mark that you might hear on some of the other podcasts that are out there, because Lord knows there's how many podcasts out there available for people to listen to. But I think he quickly learned a lot of respect for Frank D as that interview unfolded.
Well, I would hope he does have some respect for Frank D. I have a newfound respect for Vince Russo, and we've been very very cordial to each other on Twitter, you know, since the interview. So I'm not some jabroni, like you said, some jabroni Mark out there. I've been, you know, watching wrestling since I was about 6 years old, and I've seen everything there is to see in this business, and I've followed a lot of things. I've actually gone to wrestling school and learned how to take bumps in a ring. I'm not an idiot when it comes here. I'm the ultimate student of the game. I've always said to people that I know, if I was working at WWE, I'd be Triple H's best friend because I know everything there is to know about the business. You know, I'm 24/7, really 24/7 the business. That's how I am. And I think it shows here when we're doing a podcast how much passion you have for it. If you talk about two guys that are 24/7 really in the wrestling business, Steve has a website here, you know, that he's been running since 97, you know, which I think is a pretty good, you know, website here. The fact that we give you all this content that you get, you know, audio podcasts, you get exclusive news stories for free. They'll charge you a premium, you know, $5.99 here or $10.99 there a month or $9.99 or something like that. We're not charging you anything. So, you know, we are 24/7 business. We have passion for the business, and the passion showed last week in that interview that we could ask questions and not have any, you know, fluff questions. You know, we ask the intelligent wrestling fans questions out there and not some stupid stuff about, oh, well, how did you get your start and all that, et cetera. So, ultimately, I think that the interview turned out very, very well. I hope a lot of people out there enjoyed it. I've heard nothing but positive feedback. Some negative, the majority of it has been positive. Just Russo is that type of guy. Russo is a heat magnet, and it drew heat on the podcast here, and something that we've been, you know, really needing for a while.
Is there somebody out there charging $9.99 a month? I wasn't aware of that.
I think they are charging $9.99 or $12.99, but $9.99 is what they're charging, Steve. And, you know, I'm not going to put anything over. So you want to know what's $9.99? Go Google it.
There you go. Should be hard to find.
Yep.
We want to talk a little bit about the Russo interview. This is our first show since we did the interview. And, of course, Frank D and I have talked, you know, text messages, Twitter. We had a conversation about Russo after we spoke to him, which actually, as you said, after the interview with Russo, we had a really good discussion after that that unfortunately people didn't get a chance to listen to. But I think, you know, 2 hours is a pretty long podcast and interview as it was.
Yeah.
But there's a couple of things I think. Obviously, listen back to the interview, and we've gotten feedback, comments on it. I think there's a couple of things we probably should go over. And, you know, the first thought was, I remember somebody said on Twitter that I wasn't buying anything Vince Russo was saying. I want to start off by saying that there certainly was things I agreed with what he said. There were certainly things I didn't agree with what he said. And there were certainly things I thought he spun, probably to his favor. But you remember, the guy's talking about his legacy now, reflecting back on his career. But I want to say that probably the most telling thing that he said, and then we'll get into other areas. When I brought up the question about the common criticism of Vince Russo is that when he was working at the WIP, WWF, and it's funny, he always said WWE, not WWF, but when he was working at WWF, he was filtered by Vince McMahon, and that a lot of the credit should go to Vince McMahon because Vince decided what was good and what was not good to put on television. And that's what escalated Raw to pass Nitro in the ratings. And I think Vince Russo rightly pointed out that if Vince is a genius, why isn't he editing today's stuff to make it good? Why is Raw such a stale brand, stale show, etc.? You know, Frank, if Vince was a genius, where was he in 93 and 94, 95 when he was getting his butt kicked and his ratings were going through the floor when he had all the dinks and doinks and goons and trash men, etc.? You know, where was the genius in 95, 96 before Russo took over the creative department? And I think he made valid points there. And if you don't want to give Russo credit on anything, I think you at least have to point out that, you know, Vinnie Rue was there when the Attitude Era flourished and that Raw caught Nitro in the ratings. And I think with him and Ferrara, you know, even if you're not a Russo mark or a Russo fan, you got to give credit where credit is due. I mean, he was a guy come up with a lot of the stuff you saw during the Attitude Era.
Very true. You look at a situation where there were two guys writing the show back in the Attitude Era, and then you had, as opposed to today, you have 35-plus writers. Why is it that two guys could write the show in the Attitude Era? They had, you know, 2 hours of TV that they were writing, you know, each week, and now you have all these writers that are writing the product today and the show sucks. That just shows you right there that maybe Vince McMahon is the genius that people make him out to be.
True.
Because if he were, then the wrestling business wouldn't be in a crapper, but it's been in the last 12 years. I mean, they would be doing things left and right. I mean, why is it that the WWE's two top shows, Raw and SmackDown, suck really, really badly, But then the NXT TV show, which is a WWE-produced show, Steve, completely kicks the main show's asses. Why is that?
Yeah, everybody's buzzing about NXT on the social media. I'm seeing, where's everybody talking about Raw and SmackDown being
right.
so great?
And this NXT brand, from what I understand, this NXT brand is something that's specifically run by Triple H. And
so where's the big filter today in 2014?
I don't know.
Where's he filtering all this garbage we're seeing on Raw, the 3 hours of Raw?
But Russo made that comment last week, and I'm looking back on it now, and, you know, after we got, you know, got off the phone with him, and, you know, you and I talked for another probably 45 minutes after that, he brought up a good point.
Exactly.
Vince McMahon was such a genius. I mean, Russo said it, you know, you can tell Vince McMahon to write a TV show. Vince can't do it. You know, I totally agree that you got to look at hindsight 2020. You got to look at what worked and what didn't work. I know for
the
fact that Russo was there with Ferrara and that everybody was over told you something.
And, of course, then on the flip side, because we tell it like it is, Frank, while he definitely deserves credit for the Attitude Era and helping create the Attitude Era, you know, in recent years in TNA, we've talked about it here on the podcast, I haven't found TNA very engaging the last several years. You know, he said on this podcast, this interview that he did, that he's been the head writer for a while when Eric Bischoff was the executive producer. I mean, there's the weights and balances you have here. You have definitely, you know, credit for WWF, and then, you know, in recent years, TNA just hasn't clicked, just hasn't gotten over. The product has been stale. I think a lot of times I used to watch Impact, it would insult my intelligence. So, while I give him credit for the impact of the, and no pun intended, the impact of the Attitude Era, you still have to say, you know, in recent years, Frank, there's been a lack of creativity in TNA, and it's just not been a very good product.
Oh, absolutely. You know, the product has really just sucked. You know, it's just like, I mean, I don't know if Russo was just, you know, not in it, was he not filling it or something like that. Because, you know, he was the head writer there at TNA. So I don't know what the deal is with that. But I will say that the most time that I enjoyed the product for TNA was during the early Wednesday night pay-per-views. I thought those were really, really good shows that Russo was producing there. But, you know, on a grand scale of things, I have to say that his tenure there at TNA has, it's really been a failure, because the fact that, you know, they didn't really make any superstars there, and that they relied so much, and I don't know if it was his call or if it was Dixie Carter's call, but they relied so much on the WWE cast-offs that, you know, they didn't really establish their own homegrown talent. And I think that's where they messed up there. But, you know, to also say, you know, like I said, we tell it like it is here. I don't know what type of restrictions Spike TV had on TNA as far as Russo's writing and all that type of stuff. I don't know. I don't work for TNA. I don't know the inner workings of TNA. I just know as a whole, TNA sucks. And there's a reason why that is.
I would think he had influence on who was coming in and who was going out.
Possibly.
As a head writer.
Possibly, but I don't know because, you know, you have him, he's a head writer, but you have Vince, you know, Eric Bischoff, who's the executive producer, you know, which we just came about of you know, we just came into knowing that. But who was the executive producer before, you know, Bischoff?
Good question. I guess we'll talk about that the next interview.
Yeah, because I don't know exactly what's going on, you know, the inner workings of TNA. I don't know. We don't know anything about TNA. TNA is a private company, so we don't know anything about what they're doing over there.
And then another thought of the interview was Dixie Carter. Of course, I asked about Dixie Carter. I said, is she the woman to lead TNA? And I thought he was very honest and open about it and said that she's not the person to lead TNA. She never has been. You know, he cared about her on a personal level, but on a professional level, I think he said it in one sentence, I didn't see her grow in the business. She didn't learn anything in the business, and the reason why TNA is in the state it's in, I mean, there's a lot of factors, but the main cause here, Frank, has been the same person running the company for how long, and it's been a person who just doesn't understand the wrestling business.
I think with Dixie Carter, honestly, it's more of she's starstruck by these wrestlers. She was starstruck by, you know, Hulk Hogan and Hulk Hogan being there, and really thought that Hulk Hogan was there to help TNA, and Hogan might have been. I'm not going to say he wasn't, but I don't remember Hogan going around a lot of times. He would be doing interviews, and he was, you know, exactly putting over TNA or mentioning TNA. That's one of the problems AJ Styles had with him as well. He never really, you know, Hogan had opportunity on a lot of different media events to put over TNA and put over the talent or whatever. He never really done that. And I think that's the thing with her is that she really thought when these guys would come over to TNA and they were talking about all these ideas and all this stuff, and I guess she really thought that they care for the brand. And I brought this up to Russo last week, you know, as far as I personally, my own thing, just looking back on it, because of recent comments that Hogan has made about TNA publicly, he was just there to collect a paycheck.
And then the other telling thing, too, about TNA and the future of TNA, or the maybe the lack of a future for TNA, was the potential sale of the company, and that something I'd always heard was that the Carters were insistent upon Dixie having a role in whichever investor would end up buying TNA. So this probably essentially killed Toby Keith buying TNA, because the Carters were insistent upon Dixie having a role, which is just totally asinine. I mean, if they're trying to get out of the wrestling business, they're done with it, just sell it and let somebody else run it.
Yeah, I don't understand that. Why Dixie would need a role in the business. Dixie is not Stephanie McMahon or somebody, you know. She's the woman who, you know, by all accounts, has been the woman that has been leading a dead brand for a long time now. I mean, when you think about, you know, the perception of what TNA is in the wrestling business, it's not a very good perception. It's a company that's run by a woman that they call Delusional Dixie. And delusional is that she believes that they are successful, that they are not in the red, see, and that they are producing compelling television. They've made superstars. She's just a money mark. That's all she is, and that's all she ever will be. I don't know her personally, and this is not an attack on her personally, but it's just the truth. It's just she knows nothing about the business. Like Russo says, she didn't grow up in the business. She didn't have to, you know, pay her dues in the business. It was a company that her parents invested in, and they put her in charge of running. And she ran, all right. She ran into the damn ground.
Here's the thing. Other guys in the history of the world have taken over CEO positions of a business they don't know much about. A lot of times you see this with a family business. The dad will die or the mom will die, and the son or the daughter will take over, or somebody in the family will take over. And they don't know a lot about the business, but what they do is they hire people around them that know something about the business.
Right.
That understand the business, that can help them grow in the business. And it's amazing to me that Dixie has not grown in the business at all, that you surround yourself with people that can teach you something about it. And it just maybe speaks to that something we've always heard over the years is that, you know, she falls in love, as you said, with certain people, and she'll just believe whatever they tell them. I think, you know, what a huge mistake it was for TNA to go to Monday nights. And, you know, so something Vince Russo was talking about on the podcast, that Bischoff and Hogan's idea was, let's go Monday nights. Let's put us up against Raw and let's start another, you know, Monday Night War. And you listen to Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff and you don't realize that's not a very good decision. And that's the sad thing is, Frank, is that she could have went out and hired Paul Heyman at one time. That could have came in and ran the business. She had Jim Cornette working for her company at one time. Pick his brain. Let him, you know, let him come up with some ideas for the company. I mean, he was basically an on-air talent. He didn't have anything to do backstage with what's going on with TNA. What makes you successful is not necessarily knowing everything about the business you're in, but it's surrounding yourself with people that can help you make good, sound business decisions. And over the years, Dixie just hasn't learned that. And it's unfortunate, Frank, because I think that, you know, TNA is, as you said, the dead brand. And I don't know, their future to me looks very bleak.
Well, I mean, you get it right there. I mean, the people that she's had work for that company. I mean, she's had Cornette there, like you said. She's had Dusty Rhodes was there at one point. Some of the you know, brilliant minds ever in the business have worked for TNA and never gotten that push to do anything. You know, it's just I don't understand the mentality of working down there. You know, it's like this is the reason why there's a reason why Chris Jericho never went to TNA. And at one point, I mean, Jericho, I think he was considering it and said no. He says, I mean, look at this place. The fact that they're not making, you know, new stars and the decision to go on Monday night against you know, Raw. That was killer. That was just suicide. Why even do that? Especially for the fact that Hulk Hogan was the catalyst and not even a draw. You know, that's the thing about it. They didn't draw anything when they were down there. I remember when Hogan and Bischoff first came there, and, you know, they took away the six-sided ring, and they made it publicly that they were going to go after WWE and Vince McMahon, and it's just, it didn't work. And I don't understand how Dixie in her right mind, because of what somebody did at another organization years before this, thought that this actually worked. It's a different time now. It's not, this is not 1995. You're not, you know, being, you know, run by billionaire Ted and owning networks. This is 2010 TNA, you know, Spike TV. And just the roster might have been there at that point, but the fans weren't there, and the fans have never been there, and they never will be there, to be quite honest.
That's sad, but very true. One of the things that Russo mentioned in our interview was he didn't feel that TNA had the resources to compete with Vince. And I just don't buy that argument. I think the Carters have spent money on TNA over the years. I think Spike TV has spent money on this product, has helped with production, has helped subsidize talent. I mean, they put out the response to Russo. They said, hey, we paid for Hulk Hogan. We paid for Eric Bischoff. You know, we've heard them subsidize Kurt Angle's contract, Sting's contract, etc. They put them on different nights. To me, Frank, it's a cop-out to say that TNA never had the resources. They had the resources. They just didn't know how to use those resources.
Exactly. I mean, how much money has TNA gone through? I mean, we have
a lot.
One report, you know, a few years ago was that they were like over $40 million in debt. And I don't know if that's true or that's false. I don't know. I don't know, because I know Spike was doing a lot of that debt. Spike was
spending
a lot of that money.
Yep.
So I mean, to be quite honest with you, Steve, we will never know, unless somebody out there that's feeding, you know, a certain website information, we'll never know how much money the actual Carters have invested in TNA, because of the fact that they have been able to manipulate Spike into taking care of a lot of these contracts. These big money contracts for Kurt Angle and Sting and Hogan and Bischoff and all these different guys that have come over. Where do people think that they got the money for this? It did not come from TNA. It came from Spike, and Spike being Viacom. That's where that money came from. And I just think that Viacom is like, we got this little rinky-dink wrestling company down here that we're spending all this money for, you know, over $1 million in contracts here for Hogan, Bischoff, you know, Ric Flair, Rob Van Dam, you know, Jeff Hardy. I mean, you know, Hardy. All these different guys, right? Is it really worth the investment anymore? We gave this company a Saturday night time slot at 11 p.m. on Saturday nights, right? And then we gave them a prime time slot on Thursday nights. We gave them a Monday night time slot live. We've subsidized contracts. We've subsidized buildings for TNA. We've helped them with production. We helped them, you know, become HD. And we've gotten nothing on our return at all. So I believe that, you know, that's the reason why they're at the situation right now, that they want nothing more to do with the company. It's a brand that's never going to get off the table. It's not going to go anywhere. And I'm going to tell you right now, see, as a wrestling fan, I'm not rooting for TNA to go out of business. But I can't help but think that that's the inevitable of what's going to happen because of all the bad decision-making that they've done since the existence of the company.
Well, to me, if it could have been salvaged at some point, if the Carter family could have sold it to Toby Keith or another investor that could have done something with the company, invested in the company, maintain its relationship with Spike Television, then why not do that? And the asinine thought of, well, I got to keep Dixie. I can't let Dixie fall in this equation. I can't put all the blame on Dixie. I'm talking about Bob Carter now, because maybe the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Oh, of course. Now, he's the one in charge of the money.
If Bob Carter, I'm talking about, is so insistent upon his daughter being a part of the new TNA or whoever would invest in it, I mean, that shows you why TNA is in the dire straits right now, that they could have had an opportunity to sell the company. They probably had a lot of opportunities over the years. Somebody probably said, hey, you still got that Spike TV contract. Okay, let me come in. Let me take over. Paul Heyman was willing to come over and say, hey, look, give me a year. Don't worry about the ratings. We talked about, you know, Vince Russo and the ratings. Okay, I got Hulk Hogan. The ratings should go through the roof. I've got this talent. The ratings should go through the roof. It just doesn't work that way. And they just didn't understand that. And I still, to this day, don't think they understand that ratings don't work that way. You can't turn around the business overnight. I mean, they didn't get to where they were overnight. It's taken time for them to be where they are. You know, Frank, I really believe, is something we've talked about before on this podcast, the best of TNA, and we brought this up with Russo, was 2002, 2003, 2004, probably, 2005, when they went to Fox Sports Net. Yep. And it was very heavily booked around the X Division, all the great talent they had at that time. And really, I would say probably post, 2008, 2009, and maybe after the phase of all the knockouts, when the knockouts division was so over. I mean, other than that, you know, the product has been very stale. It's not engaging. And I really think if they could go back to where they were in 2002, 2003, and I'm not saying going back to Wednesday night pay-per-views, but just having that influx of talent, something you kind of see with Ring of Honor sometimes. You see people come in from New Japan Pro Wrestling. Infuse the current stale brand with fresh faces, new faces, etc., and really emphasis wrestling. And, of course, we've talked about too, Frank, is they just wanted to be WWE light. They wanted to be sports entertainment light, and that's what it became. That's what it's become, and that's the reason they're in the business they're in, or the spot they're in right now, currently in TNA.
Hey, you know, it all goes back to Russo in WCW. I saw a shoot that Russo did with Ferrara, you know, years ago. It was called Ultimate Insiders. You know, he mentioned that when he went down to WCW, the management at WCW thought that as soon as Russo gets there, as soon as Russo starts writing something, the next week the rating was going to go through the roof. And that's not the way it goes. The rating, it gradually builds up over time. You know, your main thing is creating new stars in order to bring people in. And you know, that's the mentality of TNA. I guess TNA thought that, you know, you have Hogan there, the rating was going to go up. The rating did go up initially that first night that they were there, the night that Hogan debuted there. Okay, and but then it gradually went down from there. But I think that TNA in the early days, see, they had a lot of things going for them positively. A lot of people forget, though, that in Nashville, when they started doing their shows, a lot of people have said over the years, well, it was a big mistake to get rid of that six-sided ring. It was the identity of TNA. Well, people don't understand that when TNA first started, they had a four-sided ring. Then they went to the six-sided ring, okay? And I think that four sides, six sides, it doesn't really matter. You got to have compelling storytelling and actually make people care about your characters on TV. That's what's going to get people over. It doesn't matter what ring you perform in. Yeah, the six-sided ring was cool visually, but I heard it hurts like hell. That was a problem with the ring. And then, you know, years ago, see, when Bischoff and all of them guys were there, they came to a new deal where they were going to remodel the Impact Zone. Remember that? And they were going to put the new slogan, Impact Wrestling. We are wrestling. When Eric Bischoff came out himself and said, majority of that is just going to be cosmetic. It's not going to be that, you know, all of a sudden now it's going to be a straight wrestling show. And that's exactly what happened. You know, they phased out the knockouts. I mean, the knockouts division was beating the Divas division.
You know, easily.
TNA had so many great tag teams at one point. America's Most Wanted. You had Triple X. You know, you had what were they called in TNA? You had Red Shirt Security at one point. You know, you just had a lot of people. You had the Flying Elvises. You had so much stuff that they were doing back in the day. You know, you talk about the singles wrestlers they had. I mean, does anybody remember the Alpha Male, Monty Brown?
I do.
That guy, you know, the Pounce. That guy. That guy was going to be huge, but he left TNA for whatever reason, went over to WWE, and unfortunately, it didn't work out for him. But just the things that they were doing right at that point, and you know, we go back to, you know, Steve and I have conversations all the time about, man, I wish I had access to those old Wednesday night pay per views because I could sit back and watch that stuff all day. That's when they were really, you know, hitting, you know, it was really edgy product there with Ron Killings. as a TNA champion. That's where he developed. People don't know this. That's where he became, you know, R-Truth. That's where that whole truth became. That it all started in TNA. The whole what's up when he comes out there, what's up? That all started in TNA. A lot of people don't know that. I don't even know where to even go at this point with this, because we're talking about the good old days and we're talking about the bad days, and it can be very well the end of TNA from what I've been reading lately. You know, they don't have a home. They right now, you know, Spike wants nothing to do with them for whatever reason. And I'm you know, we'll never know the real reason why Spike made this decision, because they're never going to say it publicly.
You know, what was kind of baffling too was Russo did an interview before we did our interview, our podcast. He was talking that the Spike TV relationship has not been a good relationship for TNA. And I remember him making that comment. And then kind of out of the blue, the day we're doing our interview with Russo, totally out of the blue to me, I didn't expect Spike TV to respond, was David Schwartz over at Spike TV puts out a statement replying to Vince Russo's comments from a previous interview. And I want to read this because I think this is pretty telling about their relationship and what's really going on. It says, "I want to start off by saying we enjoyed a relationship, a very collaborative relationship with Dixie Carter and her team over the years. We took TNA from a late night spot on Saturday nights doing 500,000 viewers to a 2-hour slot that did 2 million views over time. Spike went out of its way, not in just adhering to its contract, but above and beyond the contract. We paid Hulk Hogan. We paid Eric Bischoff with our money. We financed many shows. We financed UK shows. We helped promote. We gave TNA a primetime slot on Thursdays from 9 to 11. I think his comments are off base. Clearly, he doesn't know what he's talking about. He's somebody who thinks more of himself than really exists. Vince Russo never meant anything to Spike TV. He had nothing to do with negotiations. Nobody cares about Vince Russo at Spike TV. Nobody cares or knows who he is. We had a great relationship with TNA. We went above and beyond for them as they did for us. Dixie helped promote our shows. What Vince Russo is saying is complete nonsense." And, you know, Frank, it doesn't really speak to the fact that if you have such a great relationship with Dixie Carter, if you have a great relationship with TNA, why are you letting the product go by the wayside right now?
Okay, and here's the question of all questions. If that's the case, that nobody at Spike TV knew who Russo was, right? That's what you just said. Russo has been affiliated with TNA since the beginning of the show, when they first started in 02.
True.
You mean to tell me that since they went from Wednesday night pay-per-views to Fox Sports Net to when they came to Spike TV in 05, when Russo was there, they didn't never meet with Vince Russo at all? They didn't meet with the team to say, "Oh, okay, this is Dixie Carter. This is Jeff Jarrett. He's a, you know, minority owner in the company. Here's our head writer, Vince Russo." You mean to tell me that meeting never happened? I think that's utter BS. I don't buy that for 1 second. What I think happened here is that Mr. Russo made some comments here that they didn't like, and they came out and publicly shot him down. Because the bottom line is this: Spike TV, here's the deal. And I'm not going to sit up here and kiss anybody's ass. I'm not kissing Russo's ass. We tell it like it is on the podcast. If you didn't know who Vince Russo was, you wouldn't have even wrote that to begin with. You don't see Vince McMahon coming out and acknowledging people unless it really is a thorn. Because look how many years that McMahon wouldn't acknowledge WCW on the air, and unless they really pissed him off. So that right there is just that's a bunch of crap to me. They just didn't like what Russo had to say, and they didn't want to come out here and they want to bury him. Nobody cares about Vince Russo. I swear to me, nobody knew who he was. Really? Obviously, you know who his name is because you wrote the damn thing up, right?
Here's the thing. If he means nothing to Spike TV, if nobody cares about him at Spike TV, then why respond?
That's exactly my point.
If you think he is so, if he means nothing to anybody, if he doesn't mean anything to wrestling, doesn't mean anything to Spike, doesn't mean anything to Dixie Carter, the impact show the Carter family, then why respond to them? I think what happened was there are wrestling fans out there, probably even media types in the wrestling community, that sent these comments to David Schwartz at Spike Television, and they wanted a response, and they respond. But I think that makes Spike look worse by responding. If they don't think anything of Vince Russo, then just don't respond. Say, we have no comment. I mean, they've been pretty tight-lipped about the ongoing negotiations. If there still is not ongoing negotiations between Spike TV and TNA, I mean, they've been asked about it, and they said, well, you know, we don't comment about ongoing negotiations. And why comment about the Vince Russo situation? And why put in it as well that, you know, we have a very good relationship with Dixie Carter and TNA? Then why not announce a new agreement with TNA and Dixie Carter? Why not say, hey, you know, Impact Wrestling back for another season. Looking forward to having another great relationship, another season of Impact Wrestling. But it doesn't say that. And I just think it's kind of lowbrow at this point to, I mean, if you don't think anything of Vince Russo, why even mention him in reply to a comment you don't agree with?
Exactly. Why would you? I mean, there's been plenty of times when we've done podcasts and people out there have said things that I don't necessarily agree with, and I won't even acknowledge them on the air. For what? Why am I going to give them any type of play? What you did was that Spike TV decided a whole other different thing because you actually, you know, an executive over there actually has something to say about Vince Russo. Okay, that's open a whole other different thing. Oh, did you see what the guy said about Russo? See what I'm saying? It's like you're putting somebody over indirectly when you don't really want to.
And let me ask you this, kind of put you on the spot, because we haven't talked about this before. Do you think, based on what David Schwartz just said, he pointed out that we went from 500,000 to 1 million viewers or 2 million views, and then, you know, we've paid for UK tours, we've paid for talent, we've paid for production, as you pointed out. Do you think Spike TV has been a good TV partner for TNA Wrestling?
I think Spike has been an excellent TV partner because any other network would have threw TNA off a long time ago.
I totally agree.
I don't agree with Russo when you said that they haven't been a good partner. I think they've been a great partner for TNA. Simply because they have been subsidizing this organization since day one. I mean, you remember back in the day when they got the Dudley Boys over there, Team 3D? And they got, you know, they had Kevin Nash and they had Kurt Angle and all these different guys that came over. Where do you think that TNA got the money to do this? They got it from Spike. When they first got Sting, where do you think they got it from?
Booker T.
All these guys, yep. Booker T, Scott Steiner, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's been Spike. So for all the detractors out there, the naysayers about Spike TV, I mean, like I said, we give Russo, you know, the negative and the positive. Spike TV, negative and positive. The only thing that I have a problem with Spike is that Spike's, you know, has the limited ability of really giving Spike TV or giving TNA any type of publicity on the channel as far as commercials, anything like that. I never really saw that. So that's one thing I'll knock Spike TV for. Is that they never really went out there and promoted TNA the way it should have been. But also TNA to themselves. You know, like I mentioned earlier, how we reached out to them about talking to, you know, one of their talents, and they're coming back saying that talent's unavailable. You know, that just shows you that company right there in a whole, where they're at. Can't blame Spike for everything, but I can blame Spike for that. Or, you know, I can blame TNA for that, how they do things. But I can blame Spike TV for not probably promoting TNA. I mean, they should have went on all the areas that WWE does television. Spike TV should have been promoting TNA. Bottom line.
I can't fault Spike at all, really, in this equation. I think it's lowbrow for them to respond to Vince as they did. I didn't care for that response, but I agree with a lot of things they said. They've bent over backwards for this company.
Yep.
You know, changing nights, going Monday nights when they wanted a Monday night slot, going to Thursday nights. There was a time where TNA was live week after week. It didn't improve the ratings. They took Impact on the road, subsidized the buildings that way. They paid for UK tours, subsidized a lot of the talent. I don't know what more you could ask for Spike. I mean, a lot of these networks would have said, hey, it's your company. All you got to do is supply the product to the TV network. That's what we're paying for.
You know, here's the thing, though, honestly, Steven, and I don't think anybody's ever looked at it like this before either. Here's the deal. I just think really the problem with TNA that it never took off the way it did is because wrestling in general just isn't popular anymore. when TNA came in, it was June 2002. WWE product at the time sucked. It sucks now, but it really sucked then. It's just, you know, they had those, what was those pay-per-views they did? Those World Wrestling All-Stars pay-per-views that they did over in Australia. It's just, I think, honestly, what people looked at when they saw, they heard about NWA TNA coming up, they just thought it was going to be one of those, probably one of those WWA pay-per-views or something like that, where it's just old guys, and he'll never admit it, but one of the biggest problems that TNA faced in the early days, and a lot of people didn't want to have anything to do with the brand, is because your top guy was Jeff Jarrett.
True.
And I think that hurt. I think that hurt them in a lot of ways. I think that Jeff Jarrett there for so long was put as their biggest star because he was, you know, a owner in the company, and he was a world champion too long. Nobody took it seriously. They just said, oh, look at this crap down here. But TNA was knocking on cylinders with the X Division, like I said, the tag team division and all that. You know, they had some really, you know, good guys with the Alpha Male, Mighty Brown, AJ Styles became a huge, you know, huge star down there. But I think that, you know, ultimately, just for the fact of how stale the wrestling business was, it wasn't going to work to begin with because people just weren't into wrestling. I mean, you know, Ring of Honor, Steve, Ring of Honor came up around the same time. I mean, Ring of Honor is knocking on all cylinders right now. I think it's a more popular group than TNA, and they have survived so long without that national TV exposure, like, say, a Spike TV did for TNA. But looking back on here, even if Russo had been writing compelling television, I still don't think it would have worked. Because wrestling as a whole is just not the end thing anymore. It's not popular. It all goes back to WWE. When WWE is hot, then the other parts of the wrestling business is going to be hot. And it's going to be the trickle-down effect. WWE is hot, TNA would be hot, Ring of Honor would be hot, and then the indies like Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, etc., they would be hot as well.
Yeah, the big question is wrestling ever going to get hot again then?
There's some promise right now because of what's going on right now at NXT with, you know, Adrian Neville and Tyler Breeze and Sami Zayn. And, you know, you got Tyson Kidd down there. You know, Tyson Kidd is one of those guys they just had no faith in. This guy is knocking on all cylinders right now. And then you have Kenta down there now and you know, and Prince David, who I really didn't know anything about, but I've seen his work now, so I'm on board. And then you also have Kevin Steen, you know, who just finished up with Ring of Honor. So you have these next generation guys down there. I think that time will tell if wrestling business will get hot again. I think it's very exciting that you have all the hottest indie guys out there in one company, besides not having AJ Styles there or an Austin Aries or, you know, or Daniels or Kazarian. But you got a pretty good roster there. But is it going to really mean anything in the long run? I don't know. Because we've had John Cena on top for how long? And has the business grown? Really, it hasn't.
No, not at all. And a couple more things, kind of finishing up with the Russo interview. I thought he was brutally honest about the JR situation. And it was a question you had about what the Oklahoma character in WCW. And, you know, you got to give him credit. I mean, he says, you know, he's basically peed on himself over it. That he's beaten himself over it and that JR has been the bigger man and forgave him. But I thought that was pretty telling for Vince Russo. I think that was a different side of him we don't hear very often or see very often from him. And I thought he was right on the money to apologize and really put over that, you know, he made a mistake.
Right.
You know, a lot of people want to say that he never says he makes mistakes, but I think on that he called himself out on that one.
Yep. And that's all you can do. Instead of watching a WWE-produced, you know, show where you have Michael Hayes and Eric Bischoff and all these guys burying Russo and Ferrara for what happened over at WCW, you know, and if people don't know what I'm talking about, if you have a WWE Network, check out the Legends of Wrestling episode called Heat Seekers, and you'll see what I'm talking about.
And I thought he was very honest about Jeff Jarrett and his relationship with Jeff Jarrett or his deterioration of his relationship with Jeff Jarrett. And I agreed with what he said, Frank. I mean, Global Force Wrestling is just a concept right now, and there's nothing to it. I mean, we've been talking about it for how long, and really nothing's come of it other than just signing agreements with international companies.
Yeah, you know, it's not going to – to me, in the long run, and I'm not knocking it, but to me it's just not going to – ain't going to fly. You got to announce some type of TV. I mean, they've had the I believe they've had AAA in town lately in Los Angeles, the LRA Network or whatever it's called. They're doing a Lucha show. From what I'm understanding, it's not doing too well, and that's just because wrestling in general sucks.
But it just takes one of these companies to get hot, just have a real hot product, and fans engaged.
It's not going to happen.
And get a buzz going.
It's not going to happen though. It's not going to happen. This is a different time now. It's not like back in the day when you had, the thing about it is that, for years WCW sucked, but they were still there.
They came up with NWO, and it was something that people
had
not seen
before. Yeah, but we had to look, but look where you had to go. Look where you had to go through to get there, to get NWO.
True.
You had to look at the caliber of talent that we had back there. Yeah, you have some pretty good workers now, right? But are they on the charisma level of a Kevin Nash or Scott Hall? No.
Or just the star power those two had
exactly,
at that time.
Exactly. There are no stars now. I don't give a damn what anybody tells me. I don't give a damn what anybody says. Randy Orton is not a superstar.
No. I mean, if Randy Orton goes to TNA, does he mean anything?
No. Just like if CM Punk.
Cena went over there.
Is it really going to matter? No, it's not going to matter. Because those WWE fans are not going to go watching TNA. It ain't going to happen. They never have and never will.
It's like Christian when he went to TNA. Nobody watching him over there.
They're going to think of, do you even wrestle anymore? Same thing.
Here I am busting my butt in a TNA ring and nobody's watching. Just 1,100 people in the impact zone. Only people seeing me wrestle. Isn't that amazing? Another thing Russo said that I know both of us had our heads scratching was the comments about Booker T.
Yeah.
And we've been talking about, minorities on this podcast that, if you want to watch minorities right now is to watch Ring of Honor. They're really pushing the minorities, specifically African-American wrestlers. And the comment that he made that everybody in the booking room looked at each other and said, we got to go with Booker T as the champion. Now, I would love for that to be true, Frank, but I had to get the shovel out on that one. As he pointed out, no two people agree upon everything. And I can't imagine that booking committee said, let's go with Booker T as our champion. Now, he certainly deserved it based on the body of work Booker T had, but I didn't buy that. I didn't buy that for a second.
Yeah, I didn't buy that one either. I can't, because it just doesn't happen in the wrestling business. And there's nothing to take away from the athlete that Booker T is and the star that Booker T is. I have huge, tremendous respect for Booker T and Stevie Ray and Harlem Heat. Of course, I'm black and Puerto Rican. Why wouldn't I? But the thing about it is that I can't sit up here and say in 2000 that we're sitting around a booking table at WCW and we're going to say we're going to put the belt on Booker T. The only reason why I would say that maybe they would have said that, Steve, would be one reason why.
The discrimination lawsuit.
The discrimination lawsuit would be one reason why, but the other reason why would be because they looked at Booker T as maybe that was their answer to The Rock.
Because he's full black and not half black.
Well, Booker T at the time in WCW, Booker T was kind of acting like The Rock. He was wearing the $500 shirts, he was wearing the glasses. So he was acting like The Rock. That I think that was what they might have been going with when they said, if what Russo said was true, that they were going to push Booker T, that could be the reason why. Because at the time, Steve, Rock was hot. You know this yourself. Rock was very hot. He was doing stuff with Triple H. So he was hot. And I think that they were going to try to recreate that in WCW with Booker T and Scott Steiner. So that could be the reason why. But I go by the facts. Fact of the matter is that at the time in WCW, they were facing some racial discrimination lawsuits down there with some of the black wrestlers. I know one of them was Hard Work, Bobby Walker, and Sonny Ono, and a lot of the luchadors had ended up suing World Championship Wrestling. And I just kind of find it funny that at the time when this is going down, Booker T wins the belt, and then Stevie Ray is also doing commentary on Nitro and Thunder. Or it might have been just Thunder. But the fact of the matter is he was on commentary. I kind of take that one with a grain of salt. Not saying Russo is lying, but I'm just putting in I'm going with the facts of the situation.
I'd love for that to be true. I'd love to say everybody at WCW loved Booker T and they loved his work and everybody recognized he was the champion to be, but I somehow doubt it. Just based on what you've heard over the years with WCW and the wrestling business in general, I find that one a little hard to believe. And then the last thing I want to say about Russo in the interview was I brought up the Owen Hart situation. I thought it was a fair question. We brought up a lot of the usual criticisms of Vince Russo. We talked about the pole matches and Vince filtering his work over the years. But I thought it was had to be asked about Owen Hart since we had him on the show. And, you know, his response was if Owen was so opposed to doing the Blue Blazer, he should have said something. He should have spoke up. And, you know, something we were just talking offline was, you know, I think Owen did say some things. I think Owen was very frustrated with WWF after they screwed Brett, and Brett was kicked out of the company, essentially. I know it's hard to, you know, kicked out of the company and go make $9 million for Turner, but, I mean, I think Brett wanted to stay, and Vince pushed him out. You know, with the Hart Foundation, Vince let out of their contracts the British Bulldog, or bought his way out. Jim Neidhart left, was allowed out of his deal. Owen wanted out of his contract as well, and Vince would not let Owen out of his contract, so he had to stay. And so I think he spoke up at that time, and I think he spoke up, as was mentioned in the interview, Frank, when, you know, Russo came up with this idea that Owen's character was going to be infatuated with Deborah McMichael, Deborah at that time, that Owen didn't want to do that. Owen wasn't comfortable doing that, so he did speak up. So, you know, when I was listening to that, you know, listening to Vince Russo talk about the situation, yeah, he could have said something. He could have said, I didn't want to do the Blue Blazer. But I saw it totally as a demotion to Owen Hart. I think, remember, Blue Blazer was created in 89 to hide Owen Hart's identity. Is not, you know, he was Brett's little brother, and they didn't want to bring that up at that time. It was a demotion, and I think that, in fairness to Owen Hart, he did say something. And to say, if he wasn't comfortable with Blue Blazer, he should have said something. We already said something about the Deborah McMahon storyline he didn't want to do, or Deborah McMichael storyline he didn't want to do. Look where that got him. What would have happened if he would have said, I don't want to do the Blue Blazer storyline? Frank, he would have been a jobber in WWF.
I think that he would have been relegated to Sunday Night Heat or something like that. Or yeah, you definitely would have been a jobber. I mean, let's be honest about it. There's no reason why Owen should have even been in the mid card, especially when he came back after the screw job happened in Montreal and he was feuding with Shawn Michaels. Why that happened? Because Shawn Michaels buried Owen Hart. Because Shawn, I mean, first he was feuding with Shawn, and then it moved to him feuding with Triple H. And then Owen just never really got back to that level ever again after his run with Shawn.
Yeah, for him to say, I mean, just for Russo to say he should have said something, I mean, I think Owen did say something over the years, and look at where it got him. He was the Blue Blazer in 1999.
Yeah.
I mean, shame on WWF, and the guy was, remember when he was off television after the Survivor Series 97, and he came back, and you think he's going to be a big star now. Vince didn't let him go, so Vince is going to push him as a main star. And I liked the tag team with Jeff Jarrett. They were a good tag team, but
Owen should never be at that level.
No, I mean, he was past that. He had been a good tag team wrestler over the years. He was ready for that singles-level main event star power, and they just never gave him that access. They never gave him that push, which is unfortunate.
Owen, people debated for years if Owen would have been the WWE champion or whatever. Personally, me, I don't think he would have been, because they never put the belt on Rick Rude or Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig. So I really don't think they ever would have put it on Owen Hart. I think Owen Hart was would have been, had Owen Hart lived to see the WCW come over, I think Owen would have been the world champion. Yes, absolutely. But I don't think he ever would have been the WWE champion. I'm sorry, I just don't think he would have. I don't think Vince would have pushed him to that level. Obviously, it's pretty obvious that he wouldn't have, because, like I said, Owen came back after that happened, and he feuded with Shawn Michaels, and him and Shawn Michaels had a couple of matches. I don't you know, see, looking back on it, they didn't even have a pay-per-view match.
That's hard to believe.
I think it was just on Monday, if I remember correctly, it was Monday Night Raw, from the Nassau Coliseum. And it was a night that Kane and The Undertaker were out there, and they took out the Hardy Boys and a couple other guys. And it was that night that Shawn and Owen had a match. I'm saying that I don't think they ever had a pay-per-view match. I can't remember them ever having one. I think they had one match on TV, and that was it. And then they transitioned over to Shawn working with Taker, I believe, leading into the Rumble, Royal Rumble.
You know, I don't remember Owen and HBK wrestling on pay-per-view either.
Yeah, it didn't happen.
That's hard to believe. Of course, they, we know at that time they were going more with HBK and Steve Austin. You maybe understand from that perspective, but I just thought, you know, they were so insistent about Owen not leaving after Brett was screwed, and they kept him around, and they really didn't give him the monster singles push that I think he rightly deserved at that time.
They should have, they should have, man. They should have, man. And he got put with the Nation at one point. If you remember that, feuded with Triple H. I mean, majority of 98 was just him feuding with Triple H, or him feuding with Shamrock, and never really getting back up to that WWF championship level. Then they put him with Owen Hart. I think that was kind of like a makeshift tag team that actually worked. So it backfired on them, and they put him in a Blue Blazer, and that backfired on them too. Owen was that good of a guy that he made it work. He turned he turned that whole thing around.
I don't know. I just thought they missed the boat with Owen, and I guess if you say he missed the boat with Owen coming back, I guess that's partly Russo's responsibility as well.
Well, you know,
he was the head booker.
He was the head writer, but as we know now, because the same thing has happened over there with Triple H, Vince has a final say.
Yes, he does. And I guess, you know, wrapping up with Russo here, did you want to mention the reporter that had a few words about the Vince Russo interview?
Well, you know, here's what I'm going to say about this situation, okay? I just don't like it that, you know, when we do an interview or whatever, the thing is about is that, you know, some stories we get from other places, that, you know, you always, it's a common courtesy to give credit where credit's due, correct?
That's absolutely.
You know, I do assignments in my college class all the time, and if I have, you know, if I get the answer from somebody else, I always spot that, hey, I got the answer from here. Okay, same thing with the interview. You know, a certain guy out there, certain website, decides that he wants to hear about the podcast with Russo, and you know, he wants to make, you know, mention that somebody said that somebody blackmailed Vince Russo or something like that, which is not at all the truth, and he just didn't want to give credit where credit is due. You know, didn't want to give credit for that. The credit was, it was our podcast, which you were referring to, and he wanted to give notice of that, and he also, I guess something else happened where he said take him off the mailing list or whatever. So, you know, I don't want to visit that website anyway to see, because I don't want to get any virus in my laptop or anywhere else. So I'll just say that it's very unprofessional not to give credit where credit is due. You know, we come on here and we tell it like it is, and I'm telling it like it is right now. Hey, that guy over there, I'm talking about MJ, he doesn't want to give credit. Screw him.
Yeah, they always want credit for their stuff, and then when we do something, that we don't get any credit.
Exactly.
And, you know, if you're going to refer to our interview in some forum, at least give us the credit for doing that interview. And I just want to say one thing about it, because he brought up one point that I said that he was blackmailed. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about Vince Russo. What happened was Vince Russo, as he said on this podcast, he sent out a response or an email to TNA people, TNA employees, and somehow he carbon copied a Johnson. Yeah, it went out to another reporter. It went out to a reporter for another website, and that reporter decided that he was going to either have Vince Russo admit he's with TNA, or he was going to go live with his story that he is working for TNA. And to me, Frank, I don't know what your definition of blackmail is, but if you tell somebody you do this or I do this, to me that's blackmail.
Yeah, it's blackmail. It's you know, stuff they do in Washington all the time. It's no different. So I don't really consider how it is that this is not blackmail. You definitely blackmail the guy, and a guy knows who. You know, listen, this podcast sounds like it is. Let's cut the crap, right? Okay, Mike Johnson knows that he blackmailed Vince Russo, and that's just the bottom line. You did it, okay? And I don't need to visit your damn PW spyware website anyways. And that's just how it is. I'm not gonna sugarcoat anything on here. That's how I feel about it. And if Mike Johnson has a problem with what Frank D's saying, come to realfrankd@twitter.com. That's all you have to do.
Cool.
MJ. if MJ, and I'm not talking about Michael Jackson, if MJ, Mike Johnson has a problem, you know, if he has a problem with what we have to say here, hey, Jorik Report at Twitter, realfrankdee at Twitter. Hey, I'm not hard to find. Say, nope. Come holler at your boy. That's all you have to do. I don't care. You know, give credit where credit is due. You want to sit up there and call somebody out. The fact that you blackmail somebody, the fact that you cost this guy, you know, his livelihood, his income. Hey, man, if that happened to me, I'd be pissed off too.
I just read a long response to the interview that he didn't even mention by name.
The interview was here on the Jorik Report podcast from Jorik.net is where it's from. Okay,
you know
where it is, Johnson. I'm mentioning your website, PW Spyware. I mean, I'm putting over right, our PW Virus, our PW Blockup. You know, that's what it is. PW Blockup pop-up. That's all it is.
And that's all we want to say about that. And I guess the final thought, and again, yeah, the final thought with Russo, we ran the poll at Gerwig.net, Frank. Should Vince Russo be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame? 68% voted no. 32% said yes. So one-third says yes, two-thirds says no. What does Frank D. say about Vince Russo in the WWE Hall of Fame?
Hey, you know what? The WWE Hall of Fame doesn't really mean anything to begin with. So you want to put Russo in the Hall of Fame, I would have really no problem with it. The guy's a former WCW World Heavyweight Champion, right? So why?
So is David Arquette.
So is David Arquette. Exactly. So, I mean, why would, you know, it doesn't, you know, the Hall of Fame doesn't even matter anymore. It don't matter. It doesn't matter to me. You know, it's not, people, there's so much other things to be concerned about, and the Hall of Fame ain't one of them. So, you know, if they would put Russo in the Hall of Fame, see, honestly, I wouldn't have a problem with it. Just like if they were to say they want to put Todd Pettingill in the Hall of Fame, I wouldn't have a problem with it either. These are all people who have made contributions to the business. So,
Sean Mooney?
I like Sean Mooney. I really did. I like Mooney. I like Sean Mooney back in the day, those old Coliseum videos. I like Sean Mooney. So yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with, you know, if they want to put Russo on there. Because like I've come up here many times, I've given the argument for Eric Bischoff going in.
Yeah, we heard that argument before.
Yeah. I don't have a problem with Russo going in. I mean, here, listen to you. Bottom line is the guy, you know, wrote good stuff. He wrote bad stuff. The guy worked for the companies, right? That's the thing about it. I have never worked for WWE or WCW or TNA. I have never gone to places that Russo has not. So I can't comment. I just can only say what I have seen with my own two eyes. That's all I can do.
True.
I mean, like I said, we're not sitting up here like MJ and getting fed us information about what's going on at TNA or anywhere else. You know, we're not sitting up here doing that. So I can only go with my own two eyes, just like wrestling fans out there can only go with their two eyes. If people have a certain perception of Vince Russo, hey, our podcast ain't going to change that perception. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, I guess, were you surprised with the response on the poll then? 68% voted no.
It doesn't surprise me. Because like I said, he's going to have his detractors, and he's going to have his people that likes what he's done. And then you're going to have people that are in the middle that just don't care. I'm kind of one of the people that's in the middle that don't really care.
I think too many people still associate him with the pole matches. You know, we brought that up on the podcast. You know, the Judy Bagwell on a pole match, the Viagra on a pole match, the pink slip on a pole match. In fact, the funny thing was there was a lot of very funny Vince Russo Twitters.
Uh-huh.
His favorite country is Poland.
Really?
So you know.
Well, here's the deal. That's pretty. Yeah, that's funny. Do people remember the pinata on a pole?
Pinata on a pole.
Yeah.
Apparently not.
Yeah, pinata on the pole. That's when Ed Ferrara was as Oklahoma, and you had Dr. Jeff C. Williams sitting at ringside, and he was mentioning that Juventud Guerrero is one of the great linebackers from Tijuana State, something like that.
Oh, man. Oh, the memories. WCW.
Yep.
Well, speaking of WCW, and to totally change our tone here, Frank, we saw another tragic passing in the wrestling business. Sean O'Hare, Sean Hare, real name 43, passed away. You know, on the surface, it's already tragic, and then you learn that he had battled addictions, went through six rehab assignments with WWE, sponsored rehab for various addictions, alcoholism, etc. He ended his life, and, you know, it's funny. I shouldn't say it's funny, but ironic, because we actually thought about him a couple of weeks ago. We were talking about, you know, potential interview subject, and we thought he would be a very good subject. A guy had so much potential, a big guy that could actually move. He kind of reminds me a little bit of Lance Hoyt, you know, a big guy that's very mobile and get around in the ring. Another guy who's kind of being wasted out there is Lance Hoyt, although, you know, doing a good job with New Japan Pro Wrestling out there, which is great. But I'd love to see him, you know, someday come back to American wrestle. But, you know, Sean was a guy who had so much potential coming with WCW, the power plant, Natural Born Thrillers, a group that Vince Russo concepted, and was doing a good job, I think, with WCW, a guy that Eric Bischoff was allegedly rumored to be a big supporter of. In fact, when he was trying to buy WCW in 2001, he was a guy that had some big plans for Sean O'Hare, and it never came to be because Eric Bischoff never got control of WCW in 2001. It was bought by Vince McMahon, and then Vince bought WCW and Sean O'Hare. And was it Sean O'Hare and Palumbo were the final WCW champions on the original Nitro show? They brought Sean O'Hare to WWF, or actually would have been WWE at that time. He was getting a little bit of a push, you know, being dubbed with Rowdy Roddy Piper, and then Roddy Piper made some comments about the wrestlers dying early on an HBO special. Totally squashed his push. Piper was fired. O'Hare was out the window as well, and it's unfortunate, Frank, that, you know, he went into kickboxing, he went into New Japan Pro Wrestling, MMA, you know, he tried different things, and unfortunately, the final equation or the final answer was he couldn't overcome his addictions, and it's just tragic that a guy as talented as Sean O'Hare really never went to his full potential in the wrestling business.
Yeah, you know, I saw O'Hare, like you, in WCW, and I think it was the mid-2000s is when he showed up with, you know, Mike Sanders and Johnny the Bull and Reno and all these guys. They were Natural Born Thrillers, like you said. He was actually teaming. First time I really saw him really doing anything in the ring, he was teaming with Martin Jindrak first. He was the first big guy I've seen like that to actually do a Swanton Bomb like Jeff Hardy. So I was like, whoa. And I had been a big O'Hare fan, and when he came over to WWE, after Vince bought WCW, he was teaming with Palumbo, and they had some matches with the APA. I think their first pay-per-view appearance was Invasion pay-per-view. And they had him there for a while, and after that, he kind of disappeared. I guess they sent him back down to developmental. And he came back up with a new gimmick. He came up with almost kind of like a Sinister Minister type gimmick. He was just kind of like a devil kind of guy, you know what I mean? And I saw O'Hare work that character in Anaheim at a SmackDown taping, and the guy was just phenomenal at what he did. He was out there. He was hitting it, and I said, this guy here could be huge. He's going to be a big star. I said, I see this guy wrestling Taker very soon, and it just never came to be. You know, he was out there doing some things. If you remember at that time, he was doing some stuff with Roddy Piper, and they were doing things with Eddie Guerrero and Tajiri, and then Mr. America and Zach Gowen. And then after that, you know, after the comments that Roddy Piper made, I started looking for O'Hare on SmackDown, and you didn't see him anymore. And then, you know, the last match I remember him having, it might have been against, Ken Anderson. It was on the Velocity taping. And after that, you know, they let him go. And I thought that really sucked. Because this guy got let go and got his push squashed because of stuff that Roddy Piper said. It had nothing to do with O'Hare, and that really pisses me off, because it's a situation where somebody gets buried because of what somebody else does. It's no different than JR getting fired because of what Ric Flair did. So that just, that really angers me. And I remember that when I heard this news about O'Hare, I was really like, wow, really shocked, because I'll tell you, Steve, for about a week, man, I had been watching all O'Hare matches on YouTube, and I had downloaded his song, and I've brought it to you several times. Hey, we need to get O'Hare on here to talk to him about what happened with WWE. And it's just unfortunate that it never will come to be.
Yeah, I reached out to him a couple of times over the years. I never got a response from him. I thought he'd been a great interview subject just to see what his opinions on why he didn't get that massive push that I thought he deserved, at least an opportunity to show, you know, what he could do, because he's such a talented big man that could bounce around in the ring and take the great bumps and had a good look, had good facials and everything, and just a talented wasted in the wrestling business, in my opinion. And, you know, if we get Vince Russo back on for round two, I'd love to get his opinions on O'Hare, because certainly he worked with him. He gave him a push in WCW originally. And, you know, the real question I had, Frank, is why didn't TNA ever bring him in? Because we saw so many ex-WWE guys get pushes in TNA. How'd they miss the boat with him in TNA as well? I mean, he could have a guy that could really meant something in TNA. What about, you know, Sean O'Hare versus Lance Archer? Lance Hoyt in TNA? I mean, there've been some great matches.
Yeah, I mean, he could work with anybody there. He could have worked with, yeah, could have worked with Abyss. He could have worked with Sting. He could have worked with Angle. Kurt Angle. He could have worked with Samoa Joe. I mean, the guy could have done it all. And the guy could have came back to WWE.
Yeah.
I mean, they were hiring a lot of people back. Oh, here, I mean, there's just no excuse, man. I mean, people can come up here, you know, and say right now, you know, if you don't know Sean O'Hare, I suggest you go on YouTube and look up Sean O'Hare. And just go on there and look up O'Hare 2003. You'll know exactly and see exactly what we're talking about. I mean, this guy had it, man. This dude had it. I mean, I'm really surprised that, you know, when they relaunched the ECW brand, I'm really surprised that they didn't bring him back for that. I mean, here's a guy like Paul Heyman. You know, Paul Heyman talks about Paul Heyman guys. O'Hare could have been one.
Maybe his demons just were there and people were aware of that and they didn't want to touch him.
Could have been, man. But you know what? Here's the deal. How do these people, you know, get these demons to begin with? These demons really start, a lot of them start when they're just not happy with life. But a lot of it also starts because of the problems that they have professionally. I mean, I remember a guy that you know, forgive me, I don't know his real name, but he was a guy who he portrayed the character in WCW named Renegade. And, you know, he was, you know, started off with a huge push. He was with Hulk Hogan and doing some things at WCW. And then steadily, after a while, his push declined and declined and declined. He became a jobber on WCW Saturday night. And I remember they released him from his contract. So even the guy went home and he killed himself.
Yeah, Richard Wilson was his real name.
Yeah. So
very unfortunate as well. Another tragic passing. We have so many. The 35 to 45 area, we just had so many tragic passings. And
yeah.
It's sad. It's frustrating. And you know, the demons are out there. And as you said, a lot of the demons, a lot of time they're related to the lack of pushes these guys get. They work so hard to get to a spot. And I'm sure Sean O'Hare worked very hard to get to where he was. And 2004, he's ready to roll in the big whip, and they just whipped his career right down the drain.
Yep, he had a big year. 2003 was probably 2003 was his biggest year as far as like WWE actually going to do something with him. But I think ultimately that it'll go down as really the start of his downfall. It all goes back to people burying people for no reason. No pun intended, but that's just what it is. I mean, Roddy Piper made the comments, why are you punishing O'Hare?
Yep. It's sad. And like I said, that 35 to 45 range, we see so many tragic passings. Guys go way too early in life. And, you know, I hope that, you know, he finds peace, because certainly the guy was battling the demons six times in rehab. And he couldn't come over his addictions. That's
sad.
Tragic.
It's very tragic.
Just tragic.
But you know, going from a negative, Steve, to a positive about somebody who's been in WWE-sponsored rehabs and actually is doing great now, and is Jake the Snake Roberts.
Yes.
You know.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah.
Although he's still got the battle with cancer.
But I'm pretty sure, you know, God willing, he'll pull through it just like he did the last time. So, you know, kudos to Jake the St. Roberts. Just, you know, major props to Jake Roberts.
What a resilient guy this guy is.
Yep.
I tell you. And hopefully he does fully beat that cancer and get past it. And glad Jake the Snake is still around. In fact, you know, that'd probably be a good subject to reach out to is Jake the Snake for an interview.
Yeah.
Because we had him, I interviewed him a few years ago, and I think it was at a time when...
he wasn't very happy. He wasn't very happy in life with that.
Right.
And I think Jake's in a much better place in his life now. And the dude was out there running, you know, I mean, the guy just got out of the hospital, people, double pneumonia. He's out there running the ropes with the students at the school. That's just like, wow.
Tough as nails.
Yep.
And I want to say, too, as we kind of wrap up here, Frank, I saw Ring of Honor this weekend, and they had AJ Styles, the IWGP champion, against Kyle O'Reilly, one half of the tag team champions in Ring of Honor, known as Red Dragon, with Bobby Fish. And, you know, you said so many times, so often you hear this is awesome when it's not awesome. It's such a cliche in wrestling anymore. But this match was awesome. The fans were chanting. This was awesome. And if you get a chance to go out of your way to check out ROHWrestling.com or if you can find this show locally somewhere in your local area, if you don't have Ring of Honor, look it up on your local stations. I know on the West Coast there's not a lot of stations out there showing it, but Sinclair just announced they're going to bring it to Atlanta, which is good to see. They're expanding the TV shares out there. And if you get a chance to see AJ Styles against Kyle O'Reilly, they also had the Young Bucks against the Briscoe Brothers on the show as well.
Damn.
You know, we get so frustrated with wrestling today, and we're saying it's so stale and it's boring. And if you get a chance to see ROH out there, they're really putting on some great shows. And it was great to see AJ Styles back on ROH television. And, you know, Frank, I wouldn't be surprised if Mr. Styles will be competing shortly for that ROH championship.
Oh, I think he will be. I think AJ is going to hold the IWGP and ROH championship, hold them both. And I'm still hoping that eventually Jay Lethal will be the ROH World Heavyweight Champion at some point in his career.
I hope so. I'd like to see it.
Yeah, I'm really digging what they're doing with him right now. And hopefully at some point, you know, Ring of Honor comes to California and does a show. Maybe they can, you know, brand up with Pro Wrestling Guerrilla that's out here. And do something. I'd like to see ROH, you know, authentic Ring of Honor show in person and see, you know, the Young Bucks and see AJ Styles and Daniels and Kazarian. And it's funny because, you know, Kazarian actually lives, Daniels, I should say, actually lives about 30 minutes from me. So he'd be also another good guy to interview and get his thoughts on some things.
We got Ravon, and then as we were talking, we also got his cousin chiming in as well. So
let's get out the way.
Yeah, let's get to Ravon here, and he said that he enjoyed listening to the podcast with Vince Russo, which we definitely appreciate. As usual, was just two questions. First is, do you think Lex Luger should be inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame? Says, I know a lot of people blame him for the death of Miss Elizabeth, but there's a lot of people in the WWE Hall of Fame that have no business being 50 feet within the WWE Hall of Fame. So I think you've talked about this before, Frank. Lex Luger in the WWE Hall of Fame.
I think Luger should go in, definitely. Luger is a name. Luger, you know, when you think about, you know, Nitro, you go back to Lex Luger. And Lex Luger debuting on Nitro 24 hours after wrestling at a WWE show. So, yeah, Luger should definitely go in. Luger should go in because Luger's a multiple-time world champion. And I don't blame Lex Luger for the death of Miss Elizabeth. I think that people make their own decisions. Elizabeth had a problem with you know, her own demons, and that's the reason why she's no longer with us. So I don't blame Luger for that at all. I just think Luger was in the wrong place at the wrong time as far as that goes. And, you know, I'm not even going to touch what was going on with them domestically because I don't know. But I just, you know, I'm going to keep it at that.
Well, what you could say, though, is her being with Luger at that time didn't help her situation.
Right, but that's her own that's her own choice.
Right, right.
That was her choice. She wanted to be with him. Just like with the same thing right now with Ray Rice. You know, at the end, we can be pissed off at Ray Rice as much as we want to for beating up you know, beating her up. But you know what? She decided to go and marry the fool.
And you know, too, Frank, one thought about Ray Rice was when I saw the Thursday night game when a lot of the fans out there, the football fans, were wearing the number 27 jersey to the games. Are they condoning domestic violence now in Baltimore? Is that what you're telling me? You're going to support a guy who clocked his soon-to-be wife, and you condone it by wearing his jersey?
Well, that just kind of makes me wonder about football fans.
That's just ridiculous.
I mean,
shame
hey,
on you guys.
What's the stigma about wrestling fans? Oh, they're booger eaters, or you know that stupid crap. Well, I guess wrestling fans are booger eaters. NASCAR fans are redneck hicks. I guess football fans, you know, outside of a few, are wife beaters.
And, you know, Adrian Peterson got arrested. I don't know if you heard this, Frank.
I did.
Another big football player for allegedly striking his son with a belt. The pictures were on TMZ, I saw. And, you know, there's still Adrian Peterson fans out there. Can't wait to get him back on the field. And it's just amazing to me that we put up with this stuff. In fact, I got to give credit to ESPN's Hannah Storm. When she did a commentary, say, what does the NFL stand for? And I don't know. Sometimes I wonder that myself. You know, I've said it before on this show. Everybody knows I'm a big NFL fan. But, you know, I'm watching these games this weekend, and I'm just not into them as much. It's just amazing to me that we condone the kind of stuff that we condone. We can condone domestic violence. We can condone, allegedly, a father going too far with his son, and that we're going to wear these jerseys, and we're going to proudly support these guys. And it's just...
You know,
it's just so wrong. It's,
you know, I'm gonna have to disagree with you on the Adrian Peterson. You know, he got in trouble for, I guess, you know, hitting his child with a switch. And people out there don't know what a switch is. It's basically just a twig off of a tree. I'm gonna say this about that. I don't necessarily have a problem with that because I got whipped with switches. I got whipped with belts. And what it did was it did something for me. It taught me respect for others is what it did for me. And it taught me not to be disrespectful to my parents. It taught me not to be disrespectful to the people out there. So that's the reason. That's what's wrong with this whole generation that's coming up now is that the parents can no longer discipline their children. So when the parents aren't disciplining their children, they turn into gangbangers. And they turn into druggies. And they turn into shoplifters. And they go out there and kill people. That's what happens. It all goes back to the way you're brought up. And I was brought up with home training, but I was also disciplined to know, Frank, you don't do this, you don't do that. So in that counter, I understand what the situation is with that. It's all about discipline. The moment the discipline went out the damn door is when the kids know, oh, if my mom spanks me or my dad spanks me, I can call 911. They'll go to jail. I don't agree with that. I was brought up in a different. I was brought up differently than that. I'm not saying that child abuse. There are some people out there that will just beat the hell out of their kids. I don't agree with that. But I don't have a problem with you spanking them on the ass or you hitting them with a switch on the ass or something to teach them a lesson that you don't go out there and do this to people or you don't. Still, this you know, you follow the rules of the household, and if you can't follow the rules of the house, you get out of the house. That's how it's brought up.
I think, you know, as you said, striking them on the behind is fine. It's just when you go in other areas, I'm not real comfortable with that.
Yeah, if you're up here, you know, if you're up here fighting your child like a man, you know, like beating them, like hit them in the face, or something, no, absolutely not. That's a wrestling offense. But if you go ahead.
Here's the thing, Frank. The kid's 4 years old.
Okay.
And you're a big football player, right?
Right.
You take him over the knee and you spank his butt.
Right.
Period.
I agree with that.
You don't need a switch. You don't need a twig.
No.
You don't need a paddle. You're a grown football player with a 4-year-old child.
Right. And I understand that. I totally understand that.
That's my problem. Yeah. I have no problem with parents disciplining their child because I agree with you. The problem we have in society is they're not getting disciplined. And you get to the point where I hear kids on the street say, I'm going to call the cops on you, or I'm going to get a lawyer and sue you. And I'm thinking, I mean, these are 11-year-old kids.
But that's what they're being instilled. You know,
exactly.
That's what they're being instilled in the school. The teachers are telling them this. The principals are telling them this. And it's like, if I had done that, man, really? Yeah, come on. Anybody out, you know, that's listening here that, you know, is lived in L.A. County, you know, Los Angeles, whatever, like I have, you know, back in the day, you know exactly what I'm talking about. That would never happen. If I even told my mom or somebody that I would call the cops on her for her whooping me, you know what would happen to me? I would have got an even worse whooping than I got before.
Yeah, I saw a kid who probably was 7, 8 years old. They were in a park, and he's having a tantrum, and the grandma's trying to get him into the car to leave, and he doesn't want to leave.
Yeah.
And he calls his grandma brat. He starts kicking her.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, this is a boy, as I said before, needs to be put on the knee and slap the butt and let them know they don't act like that.
Yep.
You don't. She's your grandmother. You treat her with respect. You don't act like that.
Yep. No,
and
that's the problem. No respect. And they
no
know
respect.
That, and they know that if they do that, the parents are going to go to jail. And it's just, you know, it just goes back to today, to society. I don't know if you're going to let me use this or not on the air, but it just goes back to society being pussy science today. And that's just how I feel about it. I was just having this conversation with somebody else every night. Just how society is today as a whole. Society has no attitude anymore. See, where did the attitude go? Where did the edge go? Where did it go to the fact that, you know, if you say something now, you gotta, you know, recant what you said. Because it's not
be politically
correct.
Right.
I am not politically correct. I say what I want. You know? And if it wasn't for you having sponsors, I'd go all out on this podcast, man. That's the bottom line.
Well, I think that at the end of the day, we keep our professionalism here.
Exactly.
We say our opinions. You know, we have a First Amendment in this country. We can say what we want to say. You don't have to agree with everything we say.
Yep.
In fact, I find it hard to find anybody that agrees with me on everything.
Right.
Same thing with Frank. Nobody, no two people agree on everything.
Yep.
Married people don't agree. They fight.
Yep.
You fought with your mom. You fought with your dad. You fought with your brothers and sisters. You fought with your friends. I mean, I used to have debates with my friends over issues like this.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, though, you still have respect for them.
Exactly.
And, yeah, I agree with you, man. The respect factor we have in this world is gone. It's political correctness. Yeah, I agree. Pussyfy them.
Yep.
We're all weakened. We can't. We have to be afraid to call somebody anything anymore.
Yep.
You can't say anything that's deemed derogatory because you're racist, you're sexist. I mean, it goes on and on and on. It's ridiculous, but it's sad. And you're right. We could do a whole different podcast on that. But I think we should get back to Ravon's questions here.
Yeah, go ahead.
Play Ravon. You opened up a can on that one, didn't he?
Yep. He always does.
Yeah, I tell you, thought provoking questions from Ravon here. And the second question is, and it's hard to get back to wrestling after all that, but let's finish up here with Ravon. Did Macho Man Randy Savage and The Undertaker ever have a match, and do you think they could have had a great feud?
I never recall Savage and Taker ever having a match.
I can't either.
I know Undertaker was involved in the storyline that Savage and Jake Roberts had back in the day. But no, them two never had a match that I can ever remember hearing about, and I've never seen one.
And then, of course, if they would have had a good feud, of course.
Absolutely. Yeah, it would have been a really good feud. It would have been just as good as the feud that Taker had with Ultimate Warrior. And just,
I'm trying to think. Didn't Undertaker and Macho Man have matches together as a tag team?
Yeah, they did. See, that's what I mean. As far as
as
that goes, I can recall Macho Man and Hacksaw Jim Duggan teaming up to take on Jake Roberts and The Undertaker. I remember that match happening, but I remember Taker choking out Macho Man at the Royal Rumble in '92. But like I said, that was just basically he was just cast as somebody who was an extra in that feud that Savage was having with Jake Roberts at the time. But they never actually did business together on their own. And I think if they had done business together, it would have been a really good feud. You could have incorporated Elizabeth into that, too. Oh, that would have been blockbuster.
Yeah, so I guess the only way you're going to see Undertaker versus Randy Savage is in your video game.
That's correct, Mundo. Because it ain't going to happen in real life.
That's true. Thanks, Ravon, for the questions. We got, as we were talking here, Frank, we've got an email from Dakari Adamson, who must realize Monday we do our podcast, and
he
wanted to get his questions in as well. And I don't know if Frank have seen these questions yet, so we'll get them on the fly here. And the first question is, do you think Ted Turner deserves a WWE Hall of Fame induction, even though he's not been associated with wrestling for years?
I think Ted Turner deserves an induction because Ted Turner was the only competition of Vince McMahon. Ted Turner's money made the WWE product better. And that's just the bottom line. Even WWE acknowledges that. You know, if it wasn't for billionaire Ted and everything that Ted did at WCW, you know, NWO, Nitro, et cetera, WWE would still be out there with cardboard RAW letters and would still be, you know, having Doink the Clown running around there and the Goon and Mantar and all that other crap they were doing.
I guess if it wasn't for Ted, you would never have had a Monday Night War.
Exactly.
So, now, personally, I can't stand the guy because what he stands for in real life.
Right.
I mean, he's part of the real New World Order, which is kind of funny that his organization had a New World Order. I know he's into eugenics and he believes in world population reduction. So, personally, I can't stand the guy. But if you're talking just wrestling, it'd be hard for me to argue against him getting into the Hall of Fame. So,
right. And I think one day it may happen. Hell, if he's over.
Well, wouldn't Vince McMahon like to induct Ted, billionaire Ted, after he ran him into the ground? Why not?
I think Vince would do it. I mean, Vince said when he bought the company, you know, he would invite Ted to WrestleMania that Sunday.
Just as I could see Vince inducting Eric Bischoff saying, "That guy was kicking my ass on Monday nights, but in the end, Vinny Mac got the upper hand."
Yep.
He'd love to say that, wouldn't he?
Yep.
He'd love to do
just
that.
Just like how he got Bischoff and he threw Bischoff in the trash truck on national TV.
And then the second question from Dakari is: who do you think is the greatest WWE hardcore champion of all time?
The greatest WWE hardcore champion?
Everybody had that title at one point.
Yeah, the greatest one, as far as entertaining?
Who's the greatest WWE hardcore champion of all time? In fact, boy, I was just looking them up real quick here. That title changed hands 234 times.
Yeah, Crash Holly would be the one.
You like Crash Holly the best?
Yep.
And that title was created for Mick Foley, right?
That's correct. It was a joke for Mick Foley, yeah. And it got over. Isn't it funny how the things that are jokes get over the most? That's wild.
And if you want to go by who had the title the most times, wasn't it? I thought it was Crash. Actually, I'm looking it up here. I think it was Raven had it the most times.
Yeah, I'm not a Raven.
27.
Crash.
Yeah, I agree with Frank. I thought he was very entertaining as that champion. And
yep.
22-time hardcore champion.
Wow.
Isn't it ironic that we end with Crash Holly, another guy that died way too early?
Yep.
After talking about Sean O'Hare, because I really liked Crash Holly. I thought he was very entertaining. I mean, he was the opposite of O'Hare. He was this little guy that had a lot of charisma, was very entertaining to watch. Of course, he got the Holly moniker to be labeled with Hardcore Holly, and then it was Molly Holly, etc. But another talented guy, and... you know, again, a guy that I think could have gone a little further in the wrestling business.
Yeah, he could have, man. But I want to lay one more thing out before we close up here. It's an idea that I had, and people out there listening to the podcast, you can leave your comments for me at RealFrameDEE at Twitter. It relates to the Survivor Series coming up this year. Triple H recently said that he considers really NXT to be its own brand. And it got me thinking about what if we had a 5-on-5 elimination match at Survivor Series this year, in which it would be 5 WWE guys taking on 5 NXT guys. And the 5 NXT guys that I would put in the ring, if it was possible, would be Adrian Neville, it would be Kevin Steen, it would be Prince Devitt, it would be Kenta, it would also be Tyler Breeze, taking on the WWE team of Randy Orton, Bray Wyatt, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins and John Cena. And I think that would be huge. I think that would be a huge draw. And a lot of people out there would say, people don't really know. People don't want to watch NXT and don't really know who these guys would be. Well, I didn't know who the hell Wade Barrett was until Wade Barrett showed up with that N on his arm and got my interest. In that case, I'd be Nexus.
Yeah, you posed this question to me. My first reaction was nobody watches NXT. But boy, the buzz lately on the social media and out there and Triple H putting it over as, you know, he kind of considers NXT a separate brand right now. Certainly of the brands they have, Frank, it certainly is the most popular right now with fans. And certainly the buzz is for NXT. It's not talking about Raw, not talking about SmackDown or Superstars, any of the other shows.
And doesn't have any fellas.
Amen. Or Jerry Springer is running around, right?
Exactly. Yeah, I saw that. What are we, 1997?
I guess. So, yeah, we'll pose it to fans out there listening. Would you like to see NXT versus WWE Superstars at Survivor Series? I guess, what else do they have, Frank? Why not?
You know what? What are you going to have? You're going to have Big Show versus Brock Lesnar? You can have that, but the real meat of it would be the 5-on-5 elimination match.
So respond. Would you like to see that at Survivor Series coming up? Let us know what you think about that. I think it's an interesting concept. Why not? I guess nothing's really going on in WWE. Nothing else is tearing down the house currently with the product. And as I said I said a tweet this week, Frank, it's amazing how people are talking about NXT, but nobody's talking about Raw or SmackDown right now.
Well, but nobody wants to see the Bella Twins. Nobody cares, man.
Amen to that.
Nope.
Well, as always, we definitely appreciate you listening to the Gerwick Report podcast. Frank D and I always appreciate you giving your feedback, positive or negative. You can reach out to us. I'm Gerwick, GERWECK on Twitter. It's Real Frank DEE on Twitter as well. You can reach us there. You can email us at the Gerwick Report at Gerwick.net. I'm on Facebook, Steve Gerwick and Gerwick.net. As always, Frank, I appreciate doing the podcast with you. A great discussion, and we got off a little bit in some what's going on in life as well. We keep it real. We tell it like it is, and as always, looking forward to the next edition of the Gerwick Report podcast.
Absolutely.
So as always, we appreciate you listening, and we'll talk to you on the next edition.